Meeting will come to order, please. You know how I feel about getting started on time, so my philosophy is that if you wait and wait and wait for people to show up, you'll just wait longer every meeting. So we're just going to start with whoever is here, and the early word gets the worm, as they say. So this morning, our agenda is a presentation, two items, a presentation by the commissioner on No Child Left Behind, and then maybe some other pieces that may have been accomplished since last year when we were in session, so that we get some idea on where we're at with meeting the standards of No Child Left Behind. And in addition to that, there is a new initiative in Minnesota by Standard & Poor's, and we will have a presentation on how that will work also. And the wonderful thing about it is Standard & Poor's is doing it for us at no cost. We are sort of leading the nation as one of their first sites. Commissioner, are you ready? After everybody's here, I will take a moment and introduce our new committee staff, et cetera, and probably will allow all of the members, if they wish, to reintroduce themselves in case anybody's forgotten who they are over the summer.
Who's this person?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. There will be distributed to you a handout that says agency accomplishments, and what I'm going to do is just walk through this briefly. No Child Left Behind elements are embedded into this, but I wanted to give you kind of a year in review of what we have done during the first year of this administration. First of all, the profile has been repealed. And secondly, and related to that, we have new standards developed using a very inclusive and open public process. As you are aware, we've had over 4,000 people appear at the various public hearings that we have heard and have taken input both verbally, on the internet, and through mail. We've also reorganized the department because we wanted to become more customer-driven. Our goal is to be an agency that is there to help school districts and help parents. We've hired four very talented assistant commissioners, two of whom are former superintendents, Raleigh Mulrood from Bemidji and Marianne Nelson from Fridley. We have been aggressively pursuing federal grants, and so far we've received $59 million for Reading First and $7.8 million for teacher recruitment, retention, and the teacher advancement program. We also are currently working with the U.S. Department of Education, the National Endowment for the Humanities, pursuing other federal grant opportunities. The day of the Ricori High School shooting, we contacted the U.S. Department of Education Office of Safe and Drug-Free Schools. Within a week, a check for $50,000 arrived at Ricori to provide counseling for staff and students. Moving down to preschool, the standards in reading and math have been revised, and we earned a ranking of A from a national organization in both of those standards, and also completed an alignment that has been very well received. What we have done is taken the Head Start, the ECFE, and the new kindergarten standards in reading and in math, so that preschool teachers can look at what they're doing and determine where their gaps are as they move towards preparing children for kindergarten. On No Child Left Behind, we have worked very hard with the federal government to secure one of the fairest adequate yearly progress formulas in the nation. If you consider that in Florida, their AYP formula has produced 87% of their schools being identified as underperforming. And in Minnesota, that number is 8%. We have worked very hard in negotiations. They gave us, the federal government gave us what we wanted when it came to some flexibility on special education and on limited English proficient students. And we continue to work with the feds to make sure that our formula is fair. We've also developed a statewide accountability system that complies with the legislative language in the profile bill, which includes a report card. And those parent-friendly report cards were quite a hit at the fair. I believe we printed well over 2,000 of them while we were there, and we had such a strong reaction to the to the report cards that our system kept crashing during the fair because it was overloaded as people kept trying to access the report cards. So we were very pleased to see that kind of the extent of public interest. We partnered with Target and the University of St. Thomas, hosting a free conference where best practices for closing the achievement gap were shared. What we did was we identified those 29 schools that had come off of the AYP list from a previous year and interviewed the principals, interviewed teachers, brought them to this conference so that they could share best practices. Because what you have are schools with similar demographics. Some are underperforming and some are seeing massive increases in student academic achievement. So the goal was to get them out there to share their practices. And St. Thomas now is in the process of publishing a book which identifies the best practices that were used in those schools and presented at the conference. I received a letter this summer from a local superintendent who told me that he was eliminating all opportunities for middle school students to take high school courses at the middle school because his valedictorian and number four in his class ended up being ineligible to play Division I sports once they got to college. And the reason was they had taken Algebra 1 as a high school credit while they were in middle school. So we worked with the NCAA. They have made a change in policy and have agreed that if a child at the middle school level takes a high school course for high school credit and it's duly documented, that they will count it as a high school credit. We have also been in touch with them for further clarification, but this was made known to our school districts this summer, and we feel that certainly we want the NCAA to be our partner in having high expectations for children as opposed to having arbitrary rules that mean that your more advanced or more gifted students are going to be penalized once they get on to college and play sports. We have put all of the critical elements of No Child Left Behind in place. This means that the $689 million we receive annually is protected. I've established a Commissioner's Advisory Council, which has representation from all over the state. Superintendents and ed orgs attend this. They provide advice and input on policy decisions. And also from that Commissioner's Advisory Council, I've put together a number of working groups so that people can give advice on very timely issues such as the equity and telecommunications issue, the corrective action issue, report cards, and others. We currently have an AYP technical assistance team helping schools that are underperforming. We wrote and translated several letters that were required to be disseminated by Title I schools, provided them in six different languages so that school districts did not have to pay for those translation costs themselves. We currently have the innovation agenda that we worked with the governor in developing. And today you're going to see a demonstration of the partnership between the U.S. Department of Education, Standard & Poor's, and the Broad Foundation with their online accountability tool. The U.S. Department of Education and the Broad Foundation each put forward $4.7 million to make this a reality. Originally, it was only Minnesota and Pennsylvania whose scores were going to be posted because we were the only two that were ready to go. Since then, a couple of other states have joined us. Excuse me. And the most current accomplishment is a national first. As you know, under No Child Left Behind, there is a requirement for all teachers in core academic areas to meet the highly qualified teacher requirements by the end of the 05-06 school year. And what this means is that teachers have to show that they can demonstrate competence in the subject area in which they teach. And I'll just use myself as an example. I had an undergraduate degree in history, but I was teaching history and English. I would have met the highly qualified requirement for history, but not for English, because I didn't have enough credits. What we have developed is something called a HOUSE definition that stands for High Objective Uniform State Standard of Evaluation. That allows teachers to show, a teacher on a variance, as I would have been, to show that I have taken college courses, I have professional development, I can demonstrate increases in academic achievement for my students. Perhaps I've won awards for my teaching in that particular area. In other words, it's a way that a teacher can use multiple indicators to show that they have met the subject matter competence in that area. We have worked closely with the Board of Teaching, and they are continuing to refine their end of this. This is, in many states, this is not being treated as a licensure issue. But what we understand is that if a teacher has a variance and does not meet the highly qualified requirement, or even if they do meet that highly qualified requirement and are still on a variance, they have no protections. If we can have this eventually evolve into licensure, then teachers would be able to have protection for whatever position they have. So our goal is to continue to work with the Board of Teaching with the hope that if a teacher goes through this house process, instead of having a variance, what they would get is a non-renewable license that would give them time to continue to meet the requirements by the Board of Teaching to receive full licensure. And the Board of Teaching will be meeting the end of this week and then into March as they develop their end of pulling this together for teachers. With that, I'm happy to take any questions.
Representative Heidgerken.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. A question in regards to the variance that you're talking about, Commissioner. Who decides? You said the Board of Teaching is going to come in and decide whether or not you met the criteria, or who's going to make that decision?
Madam Chairman?
Commissioner.
We currently have Richard Wasson in our Department of Teacher Licensing. What he's doing is doing a study showing that a teacher who holds a license in a specific subject area, is that the subject area in which you are teaching, in which case you meet the highly qualified definition. For example, Representative Dabney holds a license in social studies, and that's what he teaches. He meets that definition, so he doesn't need to do anything else. However, we have about 2,500 teachers on variances, and that's who would have to go through this house process. What we put this on our website. Districts now are waiting for us to send them the list. They asked us, as we went out to superintendents and solicited input, they said, rather than have every teacher go through this process, please just identify for us those on variances who need to go through the process. So we will send the list out to school districts. Those teachers who are so identified would then go through a two-page application, fill it out. We can get you copies of that if you'd like. And that application then would be certified by the local superintendent as to whether or not their documentation is in order. Then they would meet the highly qualified requirement. If they want to go on for licensure, there's more that they would need to do, and that would have to go through the Board of Teaching.
Are there further questions along this line? Representative Dabney, I remember when we had the standards hearing that when this issue came up briefly, I promise you there would be more time to discuss it, so if you have other questions on this, this is the licensure issue that you were interested in.
Thank you. Not at this time.
Okay. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, I'm not sure if you'd have this information today, but I'm interested in point 14, talking about the funds from the federal government in regards to No Child Left Behind. Lack of funds is one concern that I hear frequently from folks in my district, wondering, you know, is there enough federal money to fund these mandates from the feds? And I've read differing reports. I talked to a White House senior policy advisor last week who assured me that, yes, there is money, but I'd really like to see that. And I'd like to know, you know, how does the funding compare to what it was prior to Nickleby, and I'd just like to see some numbers on that.
Thank you. We do have a summary sheet on that, I don't know if I have quite enough copies, but if someone would like to come, we'll be sure that more copies are made. But just verbally, our increases in federal education funding is $112 million more than when the president took office. $223 million of that is for No Child Left Behind out of our $658 million. You have to remember that there's linkages here in between Title I. And you look at things such as the supplemental services piece. That is new to No Child Left Behind. Many of the other things that we do under Title I have been part of the Elementary and Secondary Education Act since 1965. And so what is very difficult to do is to say, okay, with this reauthorization, how much of this funding is going specifically towards No Child Left Behind? And the Office of the Legislative Auditor is doing a report that will be coming out later that will articulate more. But just to give you a few pieces. I know we had a 35% increase in our Title II Part A funding, which is for teacher quality, professional development, and the like. Our Title I funding increased to $119 million, which is $21 million over 2001 levels. So there is more money coming into the state from the federal government for education than ever before.
Thank you.
Representative Greiling, to that point?
It was a follow-up, but if someone's ahead of me, I can certainly wait.
If it's a follow-up, go ahead.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, you were running through those numbers so fast. Could you make sure, I'd like to make sure I heard what I thought I heard. The total amount, thank you. The total amount of funding from the federal government is $112 million more. But by the time you factor in what No Child Left Behind costs, the rest of the programs are left with less than before. Did I hear that right, or were you just going so fast I didn't take that in?
Madam Chairman?
Commissioner?
Representative Greiling, our total amount of funding from the federal government is $659 million a year. Now, out of that, we have $223 million that is earmarked towards anything related to No Child Left Behind. If you look at bullets 1 and 2, I think that might help. That's inclusive of the increases in Title I funding. And then as you go down, there's also some higher education things that are listed.
Commissioner, do we have the piece that you're referring to right now, or is that what's
being
passed out?
It is being passed around.
Okay. Okay.
Madam Chair.
Representative Greiling.
Commissioner, just could you tell me how much, if we take into account the new federal money, subtract off what No Child Left Behind costs, could you tell me what is our net gain or loss?
Madam Chairman, Representative Greiling, I think that the best way to answer that would be to wait for the Office of the Legislative Auditor report to come out, which is due shortly. That is exactly what they were looking at, was what is the net gain or net loss. And I certainly wouldn't want to upstage their report. I mean, I don't know if I should be discussing it, since it's something that they have studied and reviewed.
Well, Madam Chair.
Representative Greiling.
Commissioner, when I asked the question the first time, you were pointing me to bullets on the sheet as
yes.
If the answer was there. And that's I don't expect you to know long-term what the legislative auditor is coming out with, what will this mandate cost. But what I'm asking is, based on the numbers you have here, since you're more familiar with them than I, and I thought you ran through them and gave that answer, mm-hmm. but I just didn't catch it. You were going so fast. And now the second time I asked it, you pointed to bullets here.
Yes.
And so I'm wanting to go back to that point, never mind about the legislative auditor. Based on what you do know right now, how much federal money did we gain or lose, given we got more federal money, you said, $112 million more, and then we know what we got for No Child Left Behind, and I'm just asking you to do the simple arithmetic for me rather than me go to this list, and plus then other people here who don't have the sheet could know the answer too. What did we gain or lose in terms of federal funding if we factor out the new money that we got for No Child Left Behind?
Commissioner, perhaps you could go through it a little more slowly. We would all pick it up a little bit better.
Madam Chairman, Representative Greiling, I cannot give you an exact number. What I can say is that it looks like it may be pretty much a wash. What we have is very difficult to parse out. What is specific to No Child Left Behind, what is specific to Title I, and what would have happened anyway under any reauthorization of ESEA. What the bullets on the page show is the first bullet at the bottom, and this was prepared by the U.S. Department of Education Budget Service. It says increases federal education funding in Minnesota to $658.8 million, which is $112 million more than when the president took office. So there's a net gain in overall federal funding. The second bullet provides $223 million to help Minnesota implement the reforms of No Child Left Behind. That number includes the $112 million, a good portion of that, but also includes some of the overlap you have in No Child Left Behind in Title I. The next bullet increases Title I funding to $119 million, which is $21 million over the 2001 levels. So what I would need to do is to actually ask the U.S. Department of Education Budget Service if they could answer your question specifically. I know that there's overlap in the numbers that they're giving in those first three bullets, but I don't know how to parse out that overlap.
Okay, Madam Chair.
Representative Brown.
Last comment then. Then I would say, you know, my comment would be, it sounds like if it's at best a wash, and when we find out from the legislative auditor, it may be a net loss, and especially if we look long term, I suspect it will be a huge net loss. So this good news for Minnesota families and so forth. I think is overhyped on this sheet, if it's just a wash anyway, at best.
Representative Greiling, is it $112 million more than it was, or am I misunderstanding that?
Mindy.
Commissioner, is it $112 million more than it used to be?
We are receiving $112 million more per year since the Bush administration began.
All right. Are there a Representative Erdahl?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, going back a little bit to a related question on the Board of Teaching and Licensure, I just wondered if perhaps you had any insight into what the Board of Teaching was doing concerning questions that have been raised regarding social studies teachers having to have specific licensure to teach, like economics or geography.
Madam Chairman?
Commissioner?
I do not know the answer to that. The Board of Teaching, as you know, is a separate entity, separate and apart from the Department of Education, although their offices are housed within our building. We have made them aware of some of the concerns that we have heard out in the field, including the concerns about science licensure and its specificity, including concerns about, as you mentioned, about economics and who would be considered highly qualified in that field. So the answer to that and the discussion of that, I think, would have to take place with the Board of Teaching.
Just quick follow-up.
Representative Erdahl.
They do confer with your office about that, however.
Madam Chairman.
Commissioner.
Yes. Marianne Nelson, Assistant Commissioner for Academic Excellence, the former Superintendent of Fridley, is our liaison with the board, and she works also with Richard Wasson, who is the Director of Teacher Licensure. The two of them have an ongoing relationship with the board, attends the meetings, and also helps to assist them on informing, keeps them informed of issues that we may hear in the field.
Okay, thank you.
Are there any further questions for the Commissioner? Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a couple of things. Are we expected to hear, I guess the question is to you, are we expected to hear from the auditor anytime soon on this issue, the previous issue that we were discussing?
I mean the report of the auditor. I haven't seen the report yet. After we see the report, we'll try and schedule something in the way of a report from the auditor on No Child Left Behind.
Okay, I'm just noting that this sheet is really based on estimates prior to congressional action this past year, so it'll be interesting to see what, you know, if the money tracks. But I do have a question for Commissioner Number 8, Commissioner. What's the intent of the alignment with early childhood and kindergarten standards, and is part of that intent to be sort of a two-way learning? In other words, is there an expectation that the K-12 system can pick up learning or practices from the early childhood community? Because in the past, much of that has been kind of separated. Mm-hmm.
Madam Chairman,
Commissioner,
Representative Mariani, what we wanted to do is to ensure that that children who are receiving preschool services had the teachers had an idea of what the expectations were for when they were to enter kindergarten. And so by performing this alignment study, we were able to help preschool teachers and Head Start teachers identify if there were any sorts of gaps in their instruction, either in pre-literacy or pre-numeracy instruction, with the goal being that kids would be prepared for kindergarten when they get there, and it would not be up to the kindergarten teacher then to fill those gaps. So, and it has been very well received by the ECFE community and by Head Start. People were very appreciative to have this work done for them.
Follow-up, Mariani?
Thank you, ma'am.
Are there any other questions? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Sikora. Just to clarify the legislative audit, those of us who serve on that committee will hear the report at our next meeting, which is probably within a couple of weeks, and I'm sure after that then it will come to you.
Chair, point
Representative Groning.
I talked to Auditor Nobles, and there are auditors, office staff in the office. Jim Nobles told me it would come out in March, which I was complaining about. It would
March.
Be so late it wouldn't be useful, and they're just shaking their heads, no, it won't be ready at the next meeting, Representative Erickson. So maybe we could ask them when it would be available. I'm very concerned that it will come out, you know, with our short committee timeline here before it's even useful when we're trying to make decisions.
Would someone from the auditor's office like to fill us in a little more completely on this? Thank you for being willing to come here. I'm glad you're here this morning to answer questions. Thank you.
Thank
Please
you.
Introduce yourself.
I'm Joel Alter from the Legislative Auditor's Office. We do plan to issue that report at the very beginning of March. We don't know whether it will be to the Legislative Audit Commission or to a standing committee, but the department is reviewing it right now, and we'll be meeting with the department next week and then getting it out as soon as we can. So we hope at the very beginning of March.
All right. Are there further comments or questions from the committee for Mr. Alter? Hearing none, thank you very much. Are there further comments or questions to the commissioner? By the way, you may ask questions regarding anything that the commissioner has been working on. This is an opportunity to find out what might be going on or what's gone on over the summer, et cetera. So, Representative Slawick.
Madam Chair, I apologize for being late, so I'm walking in. I don't think
we'll forgive you this time.
Madam Chair, Commissioner Yeke, I understand you attended the Governor's Commission convention, I'm not sure the exact wording, in Florida, Jeb Bush's meeting, and I wondered if you could tell us about that and what you learned and what initiatives you might be bringing back from that meeting.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chairman?
Commissioner?
Yes, you're discussing Jeb Bush's summit on early childhood. The point of the meeting was to talk about what all states were doing when it comes to early childhood education. ECFE certainly is a national model. Some of the discussions included a universal pre-4, healthcare issues, education issues, and so it was an information gathering session. We had some presentations from Minnesota along with presentations from other states. So it was informative. People were pleased to see the alignment that we did that had been referred to by Representative Mariani about our standards and how we were using that to make sure that there are no gaps. So it was pretty much an information gathering session to see what other states were doing.
Representative Slawick, a number of states had ideas of what they wanted to do. Most states are looking for a way to fund them. So there's a few states that have, like Georgia, one of the Carolinas, is it North Carolina, have programs for 40-year-olds. One of those states is seeing a big improvement. One of them is seeing very little change. It was very interesting when we went to smaller groups and broke down those numbers. And the majority of the states are looking at trying to do something in early childhood, but right now they're kind of all in the same boat we are. They just don't have a lot of funds available. Representative.
Madam Chair, just a follow-up for Madam Chair and Commissioner Yeke. My understanding is there was a direct proposal that came out of the conference there's going to be a proposal for funding of preschool education by taking 10% of compensatory funding. Is that a proposal that came out of that meeting?
Madam Chairman, I would have to speak with Karen Carlson, who had attended the conference with us. I was there for the first day and not the second day. So we can get back to you with Karen Carlson to respond to that.
Madam Chair, do you know more?
There were, I was also at that conference. There were several ideas thrown out when we were discussing from Minnesota how you might do some of that. And some of that might have used some compensatory money early on rather than in the K-12 arena. Use it to help 4-year-olds who needed additional help, that kind of thing. But there was nothing that was a concrete proposal at all. We were looking at possibilities and talking with other states about how they are looking at funding their proposals, et cetera. It was a very wide open, broad-based discussion, not concrete. Are there further questions? In that case, Commissioner, would you stay there, because I would like you to introduce the whole Standard and Poor's thing. But I'd like to take a couple of minutes, members. You will find these in your packets. If you were present at the hearing, our standards hearing last week, please fill this out. It was not in your packet last week. I forgot all about it and neglected to put it in there, but we will remedy that situation today. Also, I'd like you to take a look at some minutes. One's from our last meeting last spring, which was Tuesday, April 15th, and then some from Tuesday, January 27th. which was last Tuesday's meeting. Is there anybody who would like to move the minutes for April 15th?
So moved.
Representative Segrin moves, seconded by Heidgerken. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right, looking then at the meeting minutes for January 27th. That was the standards hearing. You might want to take a longer look at those minutes, but essentially it's a list of all the different people who testified. So if somebody was forgotten, please make a note of that. Representative Erickson.
Madam Chair, I'll move approval of those minutes.
The minutes have been moved. Is there? I know we don't need a second. Are there any other comments? Any objections? Hearing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
The minutes have been approved. All right, then I want to talk to you for just a minute about what we're doing next Tuesday. As you know, last year we started something called Capital Conversations, which was an effort to work with some of the people at the university that work in various areas and do research in various areas and kind of hook them up to some of us. In fact, I'd like to hook them up to all of us to just get a better understanding of what research is showing as compared to what we're doing, give them a better understanding of the kind of efforts that we're looking at, the problems that we're trying to solve, and see if anything they're doing might be helpful to us. And next Tuesday morning, we would like to start our meeting at 7:30 with a Capital Conversations meeting that will be essentially the title of next meeting will be Supporting Teachers. And we will be looking also at some legislation this year that might be supportive of teachers. And so what we'll be doing is hearing from three different researchers who have done some work in this area and might be able to give us some information on performance pay, special education, you know, the best way for that to work, et cetera. I think it will be worthwhile. We will consider it a committee hearing. And we will start from 7:30 to 9, will be totally open-ended, run by the university people with essentially a Q&A. They will have about five-minute presentations, each researcher, and the rest will be Q&A, and allow us to really learn something, hopefully, from them. After that, we will have a regular hearing of a couple of bills that we hope will be ready by then that are dealing with ways in which we might be more supportive of teachers. So President Brunix considers this important enough that he is slotting that period of the morning to be here with us. So he will make the introductions. There will be, it will either be here or in the Judiciary Building where it was last year. We're trying to get it here, because I think it'll be easier. We won't have to move.
Madam Chair.
Did you hear back?
Yeah, I did get an email late last night, and yes, it will be here in 200.
All right, that's wonderful. I didn't
Madam
look
Chair,
at my email
there,
yet.
There will be coffee, juice, and food. Yes. So.
Yes, for you good people who get here on time. The food will be outside the room, and you know, we will take our places in here, and anybody from the public is welcome. I think it will be an interesting session, followed up by... This is Tuesday the 10th.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So we will be starting at 7:30. We won't take attendance exactly at 7:30, but I ask you, please, as a courtesy to the president of the university, who is making a point to be here, that you be here on time, looking alert, with your cup of coffee in hand, and... listen to what they all have to say. I really think, I've been working on this for a while, I do think we can learn something from what they're doing, and they can learn a lot from us on what we wish they were doing or what we would like them to focus on. So that's next Tuesday the 10th. Please mark your calendars to be around 7:30. All right, now, Commissioner, would you tell us a little bit about the Standard & Poor's? Oh, one more thing. I wanted to introduce all our new committee people. And we have a returnee, Valerie Dozen, who is the Democrat DFL House Research, Tracy Hester, who is over here. Just stand up, would you please, because some of us can't see you very well sitting over there, who is doing constituent services. Our new page is Aaron Moses. And this year, people, instead of one page, instead of two pages, we will only have one. So we probably aren't going to be able to send her out for coffee. We're probably going to keep her pretty busy making copies and distributing pages of information. Our new committee administrator, replacing Lindsay Wallace, is Erin Bowie. Some of you may see that she's a familiar face. She used to work for the Ways and Means Committee. But that was like 3-4 years ago, right? Mm-hmm. And since, she's gone off and gotten a little more education, so she'll be a big help to us. CLA, Bethany Johnson, newly married. House researcher is a familiar face, Lisa Larson. And then we have Alex Jordan, who does House Republican research. And is there somebody from the DFL who does constituent services here? There isn't today. Okay. Okay, so that's your committee people. They will be listed on your sheets if you need to be reminded who they are. All right, Commissioner, please go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. When No Child Left Behind was passed, a number of states said to the federal government, you know, we have all sorts of new federal reporting requirements. It doesn't make sense for every state to develop their own system if indeed we're going to have uniform reporting across the nation. So the U.S. Department of Education and Standard & Poor's and the Broad Foundation partnered together with Just for the Kids to develop the School Information Partnership website. What this does is it takes care of all federal reporting requirements for Title I for all of the states, and it's an accountability tool for educators and parents. So I would like to introduce Kathy Wagner, who is our Director of Information Technology, and she's going to walk you through the site, starting with the Minnesota Department of Education website, so you would all know how you can access this.
Thank you.
And would you take questions as we go along, if there's questions about what's up there?
Sure. The screen that you see up here is our new department website, and you can access that by education.state.mn.us. I don't know if you can see the URL there. If you go in through the first tab, schools and districts, well, it was working. Okay, I'm sorry. Okay, the first tab, schools and districts, allows you to get into two types of analysis for every school and district in the state. On the left-hand side, the School Information Partnership under NCLB is where you can access the Standard & Poor's part. We are one of just several states that have begun this partnership. I made a copy for you of this screenshot here. It shows the state, it shows the United States, it shows the map of the country. It also gives you the address for the site. Minnesota has worked very hard to be one of the first states to have complete data entered into the site. So if you select Minnesota, you can either do that with the map or you can use the drop-down box. It gets you into the beginning screen here. This is a really neat site, and I've worked on a lot of websites with a lot of preparing a lot of comparative data about schools, districts, and the state. This one is probably one of the most flexible that I've seen. I'm going to just show you the data about the state because I want to make sure that all of the particular data groupings are available. When I get into districts or schools, sometimes we don't meet minimum group size, so you can't see everything. But the first thing that you see when you pick either a school, a district, or the state is you get this little snapshot of data here. So what we have on the first screen here are 2003 quick facts. What we get is a headcount enrollment, so for any entity you're looking at, you can immediately know what the size is. You also get a really important figure, which is the percent of economically disadvantaged students. That's one of the key factors associated with achievement. We also get some AIP information, just some real quick things here. This particular figure shows the AIP reading, the AIP index points that were earned by the total group. So in this case, this is the number of index points earned by the total state in reading, and then the number of index points earned by the total state in math. If you remember the information about the AYP system, we use an index point system to tell whether schools and districts have met federal requirements. Schools get a full index point for every kid in the school who is scoring at or above what we consider to be grade level, which is a score of 1420 on the MCAs. And in the beginning years, schools also get a half point for kids that are scoring close to grade level, so that would be level 2A. As the index system rolls out, have our kids be proficient, 100% proficient in the school year 2013-2014, schools and districts will have to get 100 index points. So you can see by these two figures that Minnesota is pretty close already as a state to the goal of 100 index points or 100% of kids proficient. Another quick piece of information here are the NAEP scores. So we have, NAEP is another metric that is used across the country to provide comparable information. NAEP goes in and samples students in reading and math at grades 4 and 8. So what you see here is the percent of kids that are proficient according to NAEP standards, 33% in reading, grade 4, 42% in math, grade 4. The metric has changed, so even though the percentage is lower, Minnesota is still doing very well on NAEP standards, and I'm not going to go into a whole NAEP thing here, but we have actually scored pretty high recently on some NAEP tests. So what this sheet does is it gives you several different pieces of information real quickly as a summary about how your school or district or the state is doing.
Are there questions? Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just on the point of economically disadvantaged, we've seen the relationship for many, many years, and I'm just wondering, given the learning gap that we're looking at again, is the department doing anything to try to identify why there's a relationship? I mean, we can also find a lot of economically disadvantaged kids that do very well. And I've done three separate years of graphing and comparing spending levels to test level outcomes in school districts all across the state. And I find it quite profound and consistent that there's virtually no relationship with increased funding and increased test scores, at least in the 3 years that I've chosen since we started this testing. And I'm wondering, is the department looking at other factors to try to understand why there's an apparent relationship between economically disadvantaged and low test scores?
Commissioner? Oh.
New face.
Jeppy, what is your title exactly?
Madam Chair, Representative Olson, my name is Jessie Montano. I'm Director of the NCLB Consolidated Programs.
Okay, Director.
Representative Olson, while we haven't done a study directly, what I want to share with you is some of the things that we're finding in a lot of the schools that we're working with that have not made adequate yearly progress. I want to start, first of all, by saying that one of the things we find is that the expectation set for these students is very low. And there's been a considerable amount of research that shows if you have high expectations, students will meet those expectations. We walked into some schools where the teachers are not even familiar with our standards. In some cases, the districts have their own set of standards, and they're far, far lower than our standards that we have established. We're finding in some of these buildings that they need to focus on a number of programs rather than having numerous programs that in some cases contradict each other. We're finding in some cases where there's conflicting curriculum is inconsistent. We were in a building recently where the three third grade teachers were using different math curriculums. We're finding that in some cases math or curriculum is not aligned. When you ask teachers, do you speak to teachers in grades above you and below you? They pretty consistently respond, well, no, we haven't been, but that's probably what we should be doing. So many of the things we're finding are the kinds of things that we feel are things that should be happening. Why they're not happening, we're not sure. Some of it is lack to maybe some good professional development opportunities. But those are the kinds of things that we're finding as we work with some of these schools. And what our goal is to provide them the feedback that we find. We go in there and do a data analysis with some of the data that we put together for these schools. We look at test scores. We disaggregate the data, and then we also do site reviews. And we take a team of staff and experts into these schools, and they do a qualitative review, and then we provide the schools with the feedback and the findings that we have and allow them that opportunity and facilitate the opportunity for them to discuss it and point to them where their own self-analysis, which they have done previous to this, might conflict with some of the data and information that we're finding. So while we haven't done a direct study, those are some of the things we're finding.
Madam Chair.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Montano, I appreciate your comments and a number of things you're doing. One of my concerns is that we always see this data about economically disadvantaged, and I have yet to see any documentation whatsoever that shows there's an economic reason specifically that our dollars, increased dollars, are solving that will help bring those kids up. The expectations being very low is one good point, because there's no reason for that, and you don't need money to increase expectations. We're trying to establish consistent expectations everywhere, and increased funding is not necessary for that. And I agree, that is very, very key. And I just want to raise the point of concern by noting that data based on the related to the economically disadvantaged, that we're often creating, and I don't think this is intended at all, but we're often creating a perception that that is a cause, when in fact I believe there's very good evidence that it's not a cause. In fact, I could even email you the graphs that I have. I've passed them around many times, but maybe you hadn't seen them, and you might find that helpful. And also just want to hope you continue with the finding ways that we can encourage teachers to communicate with the teachers ahead and behind, because I think that's key as well. So thank you for your comments.
Representative Bernardi.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One comment regarding what Representative Olson is talking about regarding dollars and increasing performance. I know at our school we've had challenge because of budget cuts to have to increase the number of classes within a day that a teacher teaches, and they've had a hard time actually fitting in time to meet with other teachers at their own grade level for students, let alone the thought of talking with people ahead, teachers ahead and behind them. That takes resources to make sure that that can be carved out of the day, so that we aren't piling more students on teachers rather than doing things that are effective with communicating with teachers above and behind. And that does take resources and dollars. My question is regarding that first graph. You went over that NEAB, I think it is. It's very NAEP. Okay.
NAEP, yeah.
It's very. I didn't understand it because it said percentages, and you said we're doing well. And when I see 37% and 44%, I'm thinking I don't understand what you're telling us. And the other thing is just for so that you know, as you go through this, go through your charts. A lot of I know people out here sitting on cannot see them, and so you're gonna have to be very clear and specific because we don't have a hard copy in front of us. So maybe in the future that probably would be helpful. So if you could explain to me how those percentages are showing us that we're doing good, and what percentages is a measure of doing well.
Madam Chair, Representative, this is the first sheet here that I am showing you is just a quick snapshot of the state. What you can get on this first screenshot are a few of the pieces of information that we collect about state achievement. So
the headcount, and I'm going to go through all the figures.
No, excuse me, Madam Chair. I'm asking one specific question, and that's about NAEP. I want to understand.
Excuse me, sure. Representative Bernardi?
Yeah, I asked a question, and yes. She's going through it all again for me, and I don't need her to take that kind of time to do that. Can I have her just answer the question about NAEP? Is that okay, Madam Chair?
Sure.
For time.
Just answer the question about NAEP. Thank you, Madam Chair. NAEP is the National Assessment of Educational Progress, and on the chart it's the fourth item down. National Assessment of Educational Progress is the only test that is given to all states in the nation. So it's the only metric that we have that's really truly comparable across the country. When we look at state tests, the NCAAs versus whatever tests they're doing in Iowa or Wyoming, they've been determined by, developed by states. The proficiency levels have been set by states. So NAEP is another way of looking at how well students are doing. NAEP divides achievement into four levels, below basic, basic, proficient, and advanced. So what you're seeing here in the fourth item down, NAEP grade 4 reading proficiency percent, 37% of the students in Minnesota are in the proficient category. What you don't have here are the number of students that are in the advanced category, which is the next category up. What you also don't have is the number of students that are in the basic category, which is the category right below the proficient, and the number of students that are in the below basic. In a good category, the second category from the top. So this is not designed to give full NAEP information. There is a link to the NAEP website where you can get full comparable detailed information, so you get the percentages in each category. The design of this page is just to give some little snapshots. So,
Ms. Wagner, it seems to me that any parent looking into this site and seeing that number of 37% would be very concerned. So is there some way of, you know, indicating who is above and proficient and above at least, so that we know how we're really doing? Because I don't know if the number that is above is 40% or 10%.
Madam Chairman,
Commissioner,
we had worked with Standard & Poor's and Just for the Kids in their development, gave them some feedback, and I think you make a very good point, and we will get that back to them, that perhaps what they need to do is to make that proficient and advanced with perhaps an asterisk so that parents do understand that exactly what that means.
Right. Representative Slawik.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Wagner, I have a question that actually was generated from a radio report. I heard about this website yesterday. I'm thinking maybe the department issued a press release about this website yesterday, because what I heard in the radio report was that we were one of those states, as you put up on the map, that were all coming out with their websites at the same time. Maybe it was reported incorrectly or heard it incorrectly, which led me to believe maybe we bought our website as part of a package. And I wondered if that is true, no? And also if how much this website is costing, and we developed it right here in Minnesota, and what the actual cost of developing the website is.
Commissioner, would you explain again how this worked with Standard & Poor's?
Yes, as I said earlier, this is at no cost to the state. $4.7 million came from the U.S. Department of Education, $4.7 million from the Broad Foundation, and the development was done by Standard & Poor's. This is a tool that is going to be used by all 50 states. Every state in the nation can access this tool and use it for their Title I reporting requirements. So there is absolutely no cost to the state.
All right, Representative Carlson.
I'll pass the
movie. Representative Greiland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I strongly support having a website. I think it's a really good consumer piece for, I wish we'd had one when I had children in school. I have the same concern that the chair does, and that's been my concern always about watching what we've done with this website when we don't include mobility, and that'll be my question later if it hasn't been included in the presentation. But I'm very alarmed that we would give just the statistical percentage for proficiency, sharing Representative Bernardi and Chair Sikora's concerns. Because, you know, some of my concern about this long-term No Child Left Behind is that we're trying to make the case that America's schools and Minnesota schools are failing. And by putting only the proficient number up there, we make that case to the public. It's the quick facts. You know, people that manage to get to the web page will look at the quick facts, and they may or may not go any further. So if we want to make the case that Minnesota schools are failing so we can go to Plan B, if that's vouchers or whatever, this is a good way to do it. So I hope that will be rectified, and it won't just be a suggestion. It will be an order.
Madam Chairman.
Commissioner.
The Department of Education never uses the word failing schools. We use schools that are underperforming. We do not think we have failing schools in this state, and so we are very cautious.
That's also on the website. I can find out how, say, for example, BBE does in comparison to the rest of the schools in the state of Minnesota.
Madam Chairman, Mrs. Wagner will be able to demonstrate that, how you can compare schools.
Thank you.
Representative Demmer, and then you might think about whether or not you would like to volunteer your school district for some comparisons here, since we have the capacity, I think, to look at all the school districts now, correct?
Sure.
So think about whether or not you want to volunteer your school district. Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I may have missed this. How do we define economically disadvantaged?
Madam Chair, Representative, economically disadvantaged is defined by students who are eligible for free and reduced price lunch, and we collect that as a state data element on all students.
Representative Demmer, did you want to follow up or not? Okay. All right, I think we're at the point where we could start looking at a couple of school districts. Is there anybody here who would like us to look at their school district? Come on, be brave.
Eden Valley Watkins.
Albany.
You want number one, you want Eden.
Albany.
All right, hold on. What was the first one thrown out?
Eden Valley Watkins.
Eden Valley Watkins. Can you find that?
So let's look up Erdahl's class.
Would you like Eden Valley Elementary? Yeah. Actually, before I even, this is moving a little bit slow here, so let me just tell you what's on this first screen. So I've selected Eden Valley Watkins Elementary. Whoops, now the screen changed. I get the same quick fact sheet for Eden Valley Elementary. That's the first thing I see. I get the AYP Proficiency Reading Index, AYP Proficiency Math Index. The school's doing very well. They have a proficiency index of 89.7 in reading and 91 in math. The size of this particular school is so small, 369 kids. This is a Title I school. This is not a charter school. The district is Eden Valley Watkins. It's located in Meeker County. The location type is rural, so outside of, I'm not sure, I don't remember what MSA stands for, Metro. And then the grades served are K-12. Oh, I'm sorry, K-6, I can't read. Excuse me. All right, so that's what I get on the first screen. I can go to the data snapshot, because what I've been looking at here isn't really a lot of data. It's just some quick facts about the school. The data that I get right away for Eden Valley Watkins is grouped in several categories. First of all, I can get what's called a drill down with the AYP Reading Proficiency Index. If I'd like a picture, I can select this chart icon here,
And what I get is a graph showing the AYP Proficiency Index, and this shows performance by student group. The bar on the top is all students, the bar below that is white students, and the bar below that is economically disadvantaged students. The conclusion I draw from this, because I know how this was put together, is that these are the only two groups, white and economically disadvantaged, where we met minimum group size. And we'll go back and test my hypothesis in a second. We don't display, for privacy reasons, groups where there are 9 or fewer students. So 10 is our minimum threshold for displaying.
Madam Chair, are we saying 85% are economically disadvantaged? Is that the way, am I reading that right?
That's not the proficiency.
That's the, bottom part, so it's the number that are proficient.
It's the number of economically disadvantaged that are proficient, right.
Madam Chair, the way the... I just lost it. Let me explain my data chart here.
It's right here.
Sorry. What you're seeing here is you're seeing AYP Reading Proficiency Index. So all students have a reading proficiency index of 90 points. White students have a reading proficiency index of about 90. Economically disadvantaged students, of which there were, I don't remember the percent, 47%. That 47% of the population has a reading proficiency index of about 84 points. So, I can get the same kind of information for math. Forget that. And if you're interested in numbers rather than the chart, the numbers are all shown on the right here on the screenshot. But the same display for math. All students, they have a reading proficiency index of just a little bit over 90. White students, a little bit less, and economically disadvantaged students, probably about 89 index points is what they earned. So again, the school is doing very well.
How about Representative Erdahl's class?
You can look deeper, I assume. In the meantime, as you find that, I'll ask Representative Eastland to go ahead with his question.
Could you pull back up the last chart, please? My question is, maybe I'm not understanding something, Madam Chair, but how can the whole have a larger percentage than the parts? I don't understand that. All students have a higher percentage of proficiency than the parts.
Oh, Madam Chair, Representative Eastland, Wagner, I think I understand your question. Let me try answering what I think is your question. What we're seeing here is 3 different groups, but we're looking at them independently. So when I look at all the students in this school, the 300 and some students, all of those students combined earned a total of probably about 92 index points or something. When I pull out a subset of that group, which are the white students, even though we don't have enough black or Hispanic students to meet the minimum size for displaying, those students would still be pulled out of the second bar here. So the white students have a proficiency index rating of probably about 91 points. And then when I pull out just the economically disadvantaged students, which were 47% of the population, so probably, 120 or something, we get a proficiency index earned of probably about 88 points. So,
Madam Chair?
Representative Eastland.
I guess my question then is, who is not included in the bottom 2 bars?
Ms. Wagner.
Madam Chair, Representative Eastland. Not included in the bottom 2 bars. Second. In the white bar, kids that are excluded there would be kids that fell into the black, Hispanic, Asian categories. Kids not included in the economically disadvantaged bar are anybody who is not eligible for free and reduced price lunch. Economically disadvantaged would include only kids who were eligible for free and reduced price lunch. Other kids would not be in that bar.
One final question.
Members, I think what I don't think I ever remembered to tell you, but I was told that they have beefed up the microphone system, so it's a lot more sensitive than it used to be. So if you have little conversations going, there is a lot of noise coming across here. So please either lean way back or something to make sure that you aren't being picked up as you talk. Okay, go ahead with them. Go ahead, Ms. Wagner.
Madam Chair, one final
question. Pardon me. Representative Eastland.
I don't know if anybody else is not understanding this, but for some reason there's something about this chart that's unclear. It seems like the whole group. It would be really difficult how the whole group could have a higher score than any of the parts that you're showing up there.
Oh, all right. Commissioner Wagner.
Excuse me, Madam Chair, Representative Eastland. Commissioner, just suggest maybe we go back and look at the numbers. Sometimes charts are clearer, sometimes numbers are clearer, and I think in this case maybe numbers are clearer. What we want to, we were looking at math, so I think what we want to look at is all students in math earned a total of 91 index points. The white students only earned a total of 90, and the economically disadvantaged students earned a total of 89. But I think what your underlying question is, how many students fall into each category, perhaps. So let's see if I can find that here.
I'm sure there's a chart somewhere that shows that. I remember that.
Yeah, there's a on the top tab. I selected the enrollment chart. So let's take a look at that. Okay, my mouse here isn't working. But when I look at enrollment by race or ethnicity, 97% of the kids are white, 5% of the kids are black, and 5% of the kids are Asian Pacific Islander.
A half a percent.
I'm sorry, half a percent are black.
Representative Erdahl, did you want to go a little more deeply into your school district? Would you like to look at it? All right, there's some courage. Let's look at the high school.
Madam Chair, what was the name of the high school we were going to be looking at?
Representative?
Eden Valley Watkins.
Madam Chair? For our Democrat colleagues, Watkins, of course, is the hometown of Eugene McCarthy.
A good piece of trivia here.
Madam Chair, even though Watkins High School doesn't have any data on this particular site, because this particular site only shows data that for schools that tested for the AYP system. This past year, the 2002-2003 school year, we only included tests at grades 3 and 5. So the high school wouldn't have any AYP data. So this, a limitation of this site is we're restricted to data that is included in the AYP system. But once you get a school, and for this, yeah, you're safe for 1 year. For this particular site, though, when you do have an elementary school, the data source is pretty rich. Let's go back to Eden Valley Watkins Elementary, because I do want to show you another feature, which is a comparison feature. The site allows for comparisons between similar schools, which I think is a real interesting thing to look at. The other thing the site does is it allows for something called a ramp analyzer, which shows you how much you have to improve by 2014. And one of the interesting things to look at is when you look at how much particular groups have to go, the distance particular groups have to go. So I'm going to choose the ramp analyzer, and I'm going to look at, unless somebody has a different preference, I'm going to look at math proficiency. I'm going to look school-wide, but I could select a particular grade. I could select grade 3 versus grade 5, but I'm just going to look school-wide. And here's where I can look, I can select the particular student group. So we had in this school 37% economically disadvantaged students. So let's take a look at my computer's not working real fast. I don't know if it's
our system doesn't work real fast.
There we go. Trying to scroll down. I don't, this is not
what the chart shows is it shows the current proficiency level, and it shows the progress that needs to remain that remains to be made. So the dark blue shows where we are, and right now, remember when we were looking at an earlier chart, about 80 or the economically disadvantaged students had earned a total index points of about 89. Okay. By the year 2013-2014, when the federal requirement is for all students to be proficient, we'll have the school, like other schools in the state, will have to have 100 index points. So the slope here in the light blue shows the remaining progress to be made. And if I could... Okay. There we go. What this chart shows is it gives you a visual picture year by year of the progress that needs to be made with this particular group. I think this is very telling for schools to look at. When I was working with schools that have been identified as underperforming and helping them analyze their data, it's very informative for them to look at specific groups of kids to see how their particular instructional situation at the building is working or, in some cases, not working. As a teacher, professionals have an idea of how their teaching is impacting their kids, but it's another thing to take a look at some hard data, and it's another thing to take that hard data and then drive it back into curriculum alignment. So this particular tool, I think, is the beginning of a real important conversation for schools as they start to take a look at state data, use that in conjunction with local data, and start making some hard choices about how they might want to adjust the precious time that they have for instruction.
Questions? Representative Mariani?
Well, Madam Chair, I just wanted to offer a school in my school district.
Oh, well, great. Okay. That would be good.
I'm ready to do that. Yep. It would be, actually, this is where my 9-year-old goes to school, J.J. Hill School in St. Paul.
Representative Bernardi, did you have a question on something that was on the screen?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
Madam Chair, Representative Bernardi, did I spell J.J. Hill correctly? I may not have.
I honestly can't see it.
do you know how to spell?
I think it's J. Hill.
J period.
Would it be James J. Hill, do you suppose?
Yeah.
Look at that one. Do your vision flare now.
Okay, it is James J. Hill.
I'm going to go in through the J search. Sometimes I found that... schools have a very formal name that sometimes parents don't call the school by.
Is that it?
No.
Hill? Maybe just Hill School?
Okay. Let me try.
Go to St. Paul and find out.
Yeah. While Kathy, Madam Chairman, while Kathy is looking for that, I thought I might give you another tool that is part of this website, which we think will be very helpful to districts, and that is you can take your school and then find schools that have similar numbers of economically disadvantaged students and then determine which ones are performing higher than you, which ones may be performing lower than you, and talk to those schools with similar populations of students to determine what are they doing differently. You know, what are your strategies when it comes to economically disadvantaged students or limited English proficient students? So it allows you to search, I believe, by any one of those categories, LEP, economic disadvantage, and also by school to you and demographics, and then contact those that are higher performing.
Have you had any success finding the school as yet?
Madam Chair, I'm narrowing in, I think. would it be Hill Montessori?
Yes, that's it.
Okay. Let's do the comparison.
Madam Chair?
Representative Garling.
That's the school I used to teach at.
Terrific.
It wasn't a Montessori in those days. But
I think I knew St. Paul had like 3 Montessoris, but I'm glad we're looking at one of those.
Okay. So what I can do here is I can compare this school
What I've done is I just pulled up all of the comparisons here. I can compare this school to schools that are of similar size.
And how about demographics? Can you find also similar demographics?
Sure.
Okay.
I can select any of the comparison points that are on the top of the top of the chart. And so if you can't read those, I can sort by headcount or enrollment. I can compare by economically disadvantaged. I can compare by AYP reading proficiency index. That happens to be the screening one. I can compare by math proficiency index. I can compare by other schools that met or didn't meet AYP. I can sort by grades served, or I can sort by charter schools. So this has a tremendous amount of flexibility, allowing you to really get down into details that you want to bring forward as you're analyzing your school's data. For Hill Montessori, I don't know if I showed you this screen. I can take a look for Hill Montessori at their reading assessments. If I just want straight reading assessment data as opposed to AYP data. Sometimes AYP data is combined across grade levels. So when I look at reading index or math index for AYP, what I'm getting is information about all of the grades tested at the school. Classroom teachers, however, or schools may really want to hone in on a particular grade level. This site also allows you to do that. Right now, we only have grades 3 and 5 that we put into this. As we continue to add grade levels, this site will show data for grades 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8, all the grades that are eligible at the school. When I'm on this screen, what I get is grade 3 reading, percent of students at or above proficient, and I get the data for all the students that met the group size. So all students in this case, in 2003, 62% of students in grade 3 at Hill Elementary were at or above proficient. On the SCAs, that's at or above a score of 1420, or at or above grade level. When I look at just the white kids, 91.3% of the white kids were at or above grade level. Black kids at Hill, only 50% of those students were at or above grade level. Hill doesn't have enough Hispanic students, so they probably have fewer than 9 Hispanics in grade 3. Then they have more Hispanics in the total school when they combine across grade levels, but grade 3 probably has less than 9. Asian Pacific Islanders, 30% of those kids are at or above a score of 2B on the MCAs. And I can look at females, 62.5% of females are at or above proficient compared to males, 63.2%. Economically disadvantaged students, 41.7%. Kids that are not economically disadvantaged, this is where we maybe get more of the puzzle pieces all on the same page. The kids who don't qualify for free and reduced-price lunch, 81.5% of those students are at or above grade level. We can look at limited English proficient students. We don't have enough kids in that category here to meet cell size. We can look at students with disability versus students without disabilities, and I can look at migrant kids. I can get all of this information. Apparently, let's see. I think since I'm only getting a grade 3 chart, Hill must only have grade 3 and not a grade 5. I don't know about the particular school configuration here, but that's what I'm
back to the original front page of the school, I suppose, to take a look at that. Representative Bernardi, did you have another question, though?
Yes, okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question about within those categories, if you could go back to that.
Yeah, you're on here.
Now, when you get the ESLs, I just want to know what categories are rolled in together and what are pulled out. Is that, so when you look at the kids that are passing the white children, in that category, does that also include the economically disadvantaged? It includes limited English proficiency. It includes all that?
Madam Chair, Representative, yes. When you look at white, all you're looking at is kids who meet that white criteria. Kids who meet the white criteria could also be LEP, free and reduced price lunch, or special ed. So we're not sorting on those criteria. We're just saying if you meet the ethnic criteria. When I go down to the limited English proficient criteria, for example,
all I'm looking at there is kids who meet an LEP criterion. They could be of any ethnic category.
Madam Chair, one follow-up.
Representative Bernardi.
And the question I have about that is, could a school be failing, and maybe you can expand on this too, could a school be failing in like three categories, but it might be all the same students? Can you expand on some of the intricacies of this and some of the traps and some of the misrepresentation of what's happening in the school district because of these numbers? I'd like your help on that.
Ms. Wagner.
Representative Madam Chair. The AYP system looks at performance of kids, and it breaks it into, for each category, it breaks it into nine groups. There's an all group, there are five ethnic groups, there are three other demographic groups, LEP, special ed, free and reduced price lunch. All kids in the school are in the all group, of course. All kids are in a single ethnic category. And some kids may be in an LEP category, they may be in a special ed category, and they may be in a free and reduced price lunch category. It is possible, it is theoretically possible, for kids to be in up to five groups. Since everybody is in the all group, they have to be there. It's possible to have an LEP kid who is special ed, who is on free and reduced price lunch, and who would fit into a particular ethnic category. So yeah, that is possible. In terms of how we calculate AYP, those kids, when we look at a particular group, we're looking at kids who meet the particular group, and it is possible for kids to be in more than one group at the same time.
Representative Slawick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Wagner, I had a question actually for Commissioner Yackey. Commissioner, maybe I misheard you. I just wanted to check in on that. That you suggested that parents, if you look on the website and you see a school has this economically disadvantaged and you see another school in your same size, you might want to check in with them, see what they're doing. As a parent of a special ed child that's tried to do that a lot, to check in with other schools, it is an enormously frustrating process to try to talk to other schools about what they're doing. One, there's, as you know, there's privacy issues. Two, administrators and teachers are very busy, and it's very hard to get to them about what they are doing, that at schools that are successful, for example, if you wanted your child or that school to model after that. Is it the parents you're suggesting you do that, or will the department, I was hoping, the department will be picking sort of the model programs maybe that other schools can aspire to? I thought I heard you say that a few minutes ago. If you could clarify that.
Commissioner. Madam Chairman. What my suggestion was that, of course, educators would look at where at their school and compare it to schools with similar demographics that might be higher performing. Then the educators could speak professional to professional to say, we have similar demographics. Now, what are you doing with your, you know, fill in the blank, the LEP students, the free and reduced price lunch students, in order to determine if there are different strategies that they could try within their schools. So we see this as a tool for educators. So that they can become aware of best practices elsewhere.
Madam Chair.
Representative Slawick.
Just as a follow-up, well, the obvious pitfall of that is going to be that parents do have access to this information. Mm-hmm. Obviously, parents that are in schools that are underperforming are going to want to do as well. I mean, we're mm-hmm. all competitive. That's why we're doing this. Mm-hmm. So what is going to happen in that type of situation? This is a public website. It has access to everyone. If there's parents or people out there that see, is there going to be a process for them to feed into or try to help their school do better?
Madam Chairman, Commissioner, Representative, I never see giving parents more information a pitfall. I think that we want to make sure that parents are well informed. Certainly, they currently can access comparative data on our website or through the school report card. At the fair this year, when parents came in and printed the report card for their school, they often asked for other schools in their neighborhood or in their general vicinity. So I think parents are savvy consumers and will use this information wisely. I think it's our responsibility to just make that available for them.
You know, before we go on with the rest of our questions, we have a couple more questions. But are there some other screens that we should be getting a chance to look at so that we kind of get the idea fully of what's available? Is that, that's just kind of a yes or no here?
I'm trying to get up the, excuse me, Madam Chair, I'm kind of, the computer's not responding real quickly, so I think I've got a little bit of a slow connection here. I'm trying to get a better comparison screen because I don't think I got the right screen, but I'm unable to grab it right now, so I'm just going to keep.
Why don't you deal with it? And get it, and yeah. In the meantime, Representative Greiling, and then Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Wagner, I just want to get back to my question on mobility.
I was I'm wondering, is it included anywhere?
Madam Chair, Representative Growling, mobility is not included in this particular site. And we've had discussions with Standard & Poor's about that particular thing. We do have mobility as an option that you can compare schools on our department website, because we think that's very important. One of the issues with this site is that it does meet all the federal reporting requirements, so it did relieve us from a large burden of having to create this kind of a site with this kind of information. But again, it focuses on the specific elements that are referenced in federal statute, and mobility is not one of those. So migrant students are, but mobility isn't. Mobility is something that we think is important, though, and I can show you at a different time how to get that information off of our department site.
Commissioner, is it correct that under AYP, the children who are tested, the tests that will be used are the ones for students who were there from October 1st to the end of the year? So therefore, we're not looking in these test scores, we're not looking at the students who moved within the year. Yes. Representative Grattan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. However, the website, to me, the advantage of it, this is the one I think that parents will be using to compare schools. And if you have a high percentage of students who are mobile in your district, and there are some schools that have, 50, 60, 70, 80, percent of mobility, maybe more, in an individual classroom, and you don't factor it in, I think you're doing a disservice to trying to make comparisons. And to me, the beauty of this plan is that it is one-stop shopping for families to be able to compare schools. And if I was wanting to compare schools, I wouldn't be very as interested in just knowing how the 30% of kids did who were there from the first day of school till the last day of school. I would also want to know if there was a high percentage of kids moving in and moving out, because that would make a huge difference in the climate for all kids, not just those who were tested. And so I would urge us to reconsider this, like we're reconsidering the not just the proficient level, but also the kids who are doing really well, because I think we have to make this a really good consumer tool for families who are shopping around for schools. And I believe it's a big flaw in this plan to omit mobility, not just for, determining if schools are failing or not. I think it's admirable that we leave it out when we're trying to see if schools are failing. But when we have I think to have this important information in two different places is not helping out our families.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair.
Representative, pardon me, Commissioner.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Greiling. Certainly, we don't control the elements on this website. That is controlled by Standard & Poor's, the U.S. Department of Education. But we will certainly go forward with both of these issues, including the mobility issue, to suggest that that is something that they should add. It should be noted that in the refinement that we're doing on the school performance report card, we are adding a mobility number for every school so that individuals will be able to see, of course, for their individual school, just what the mobility factor is.
Follow-up, Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, why do we not control this website? That's concerning to me, that it's a federal website and we don't have any control over it.
Commissioner. Chairman, this is the Standard & Poor's website. They have the same data collection, which is required by the federal government, for everyone, every state in the country. The elements that are on this website are the elements that are required to be reported under No Child Left Behind. We certainly have input, but I would think it would be quite brazen of us to go to Standard & Poor's and say, we demand that you make a change just for Minnesota. They are doing this free of charge for us. We're very grateful to have it, and they have been very open to suggestions that we've made in the past, and will continue to make suggestions as we see where it may be warranted.
Well, Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Commissioner. A couple of points. I guess one is I think we should probably have more discussion about our ability to influence the project with the federal department and Standard & Poor's. It seems to me a few years ago that was sort of one of the big issues in this state was, the fear of sort of, a heavy hand on the part of the federal government in terms of telling our story in education here, but I want to take a different tack here. Commissioner, you spoke about the best practices, and I think that's really where, you know, the real promise of, for me, of this type of technology and access to parents and communities really lies. Because it's one thing to look at numbers, and as we had demonstrated here earlier and people asking questions, there's different ways for people to interpret and look at numbers. And it seems to me that we need to round out any kind of statistics with the actual kind of activities that occur in a school that might give some insight to the viewer about, you know, what those numbers really mean. So, for instance, you know, is there a particular LEP approach that's used in one school as opposed to used at another school? Is there a particular, you know, pedagogical, predominant pedagogical approach that's shared, you know, by the predominant number of teachers of one site, and how does that compare to, you know, the equal approach at another site? And so I guess the question is, you know, are there plans either at the that you're aware of, Commissioner, the federal level to kind of round that out, or do we have plans, you know, with those instruments that we have control over, to be able to fill that information in for parents so that folks are in fact really doing optimum comparison of what's going on in any particular school.
Commissioner Yackey.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, Representative Mariani. Absolutely, yes. The Just for the Kids partnership with this website is the next step, and we have been in contact with a number of entities as to their willingness and ability to partner with us on providing that study. We need to find a research-oriented institution or entity. Just for the Kids would partner with us and with them using these data to determine best practices. That is the next stage in this particular project. We have not had any commitment at this point in time with the entities that we have approached, but we are continuing to do so so that we can get that that sort of study started.
Representative Bernardi. Thank you, Madam Chair. Regarding this mobility issue, when we wanted to close the achievement gap, and we had this at our conference recently, the half-day conference a lot of us were at, and you presented that, mobility is a factor that we really need to address. And so one thing that I would ask that you ask the feds, if you can't order them to do it, then maybe we can have some option fields at the local level so we can have some local control over our website, and it won't impact anybody else's website. They don't even have to roll up the data at the federal level. But we could have our own fields, because it's very important when we talk today about how important it is for a teacher to talk with the teachers a year behind and a year ahead. Even if a student is in there at the beginning of the first year of the school year, we just talked about how important it is the aligning the curriculum and knowing what's done the year before. It's really impacting the school to have mobility rates. So that's, and as a policymaker, I need to have that information as we set policy. So I just want to really encourage you to get that flexibility for our state.
Madam Chairman,
Commissioner,
Representative, we do have that information on our website currently, and we will go forward and ask them if it's something that they want to add, but it's not as though this information is non-attainable. We do have it available. What you see in the school performance report cards that we have is just the tip of the iceberg. What we have on our website is far more detailed than a two-page report card, and so the information is there, and it is there in a more detailed manner, but we will move forward and see what Standard & Poor's has to say.
Ms. Wagner, were there some other pages, other types of information that you wanted to make sure we knew existed before we leave here?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, two things I want to point out,
and then we'll try to get the other questions in also. We have 8 minutes. Representative Greiling, could we just go ahead with this?
I'm bursting with one short editorial comment, and that is, I find it very frightening that a large company can give money to a major project that affects all of America's schools, and then it's brazen of us to give them input on something that would be good for our families. I just think that we're going in a very chilling direction to have a private company have that kind of power over America's schools.
Representative Greiling, you know, this is a partnership between the Department of Education at the national level, the Broad Foundation, Just for Kids, and Standard & Poor's. And it was something that they all thought would be helpful to all of us. So I guess one person's help is maybe another person's hindrance, I don't know. But this appeared to be something that would be helpful. Quick answer, and I would like to get on with the other couple of screens that might be left to us in the next 5 minutes.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I think the significance of the partnership that produced this website cannot be underestimated, because if they had not, we would have had to develop in-house a reporting mechanism. And so it kind of an analogy would be, if you needed a Chevy and somebody handed you a Cadillac and then you said, I don't want it, change the color or change, make it a two-door instead of a four-door, that's the point I'm trying to make. They did not have to do this. This saved us a lot of money. It saved us a lot of staff time, and we're very grateful for it, and also grateful for the fact that they've allowed us to have input. So I think that it's a good thing for the state of Minnesota, and did save us indeed the funding of having to do it ourselves.
All right, Representative, Ms. Wagner, did you have another screen you wanted to show us?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Quickly, two screens. I did pull up the quick compare, and I will fiddle and get Hill in here in a minute. But what I'm able to do is this particular screen shows Babbitt Elementary and Pine Bend Elementary. What you can do is you can put up to five schools into this quick compare, and you can get side-by-side data displays for their AYP performance in reading and math, including all the subgroups. Also included in this is reading assessments by grade, math assessments by grade, and enrollment information. So there's quite a bit of flexibility with this. The other thing you can do, and I didn't point this out before, but all of the groups are underlined, and if you don't know, we had some discussion about this, who was in the white group, who was in the all students group. If you just click on all students, what you get behind that is a screen that gives you the definition. So all of the terms used in this site have definitions just, one screen click away. I want to make one more comment about the mobility piece. We did address this quite a bit with when we're in development, and the feds or the Standard & Poor's developers feel that because the AYP figures that are given with mobility, the AYP figures that are given are based on kids who are in your school for a full academic year, but when I go to look at the test scores for a percent of kids at or above proficient, those are showing all of the kids in the school. Now, the fact that we toggle between an index and percent of kids at or above a cut score, I think, maybe confuses the issue. But they're feeling like one of these metrics does indeed take into account kids that are just enrolled for a full academic year and one doesn't. But I also agree that we can ask them to be a little bit more explicit in giving us another field with some kind of a mobility index rate. So we have been working with them.
Representative
Dabney. I can test how good the microphone system is by staying far back. To the commissioner's last point, my recollection is on the finance committee, or the legislature has budgeted over the past several years something in the neighborhood of $2.5 million to be paid to Standard & Poor's to develop a website that was at least conceptually very similar to this. What's the status of that money, given that they just gave us a Cadillac?
Okay. Madam Chair, Representative, the contract was written to actually specifically include Standard & Poor's, Standard & Poor's under the last administration. So the website that I think you're referencing didn't give us the kind of comparative information that we were looking for because of some contractual issues. We are working right now to adjust our department website to reflect the school report card, and we are bringing up additional financial data. But there were some questions about how the financial data displays were loaded into that site. They weren't accurate, so that was a problem left over from the last administration. So we're working with the display that I've been showing you right now from Standard & Poor's. We are going to have some information from Just for the Kids, which will incorporate best practice information, and then we're also working to strengthen our regular department website to provide as broad of a picture as we possibly can.
Madam Chair,
Representative Dabney, quick follow-up, please.
Yes,
two more
Ms.
questions.
Wagner, what is the status of that money?
Did we
pay for something that didn't work? Did we not pay for it because, as you said, it lacked what we asked for? What is the status of that money?
No, we didn't pay any money to Standard & Poor's.
Or
there was never money allocated to Standard & Poor's. There was an RFP put out for a project, but it didn't include Standard & Poor's. They were not allowed to bid on it. So there was no Standard & Poor's dollars, as I recall from our budget discussions last year. And I'm sorry, but Representative Seguin isn't in here at the moment. So, but I'm pretty sure that's correct, Representative Dabney. Nothing went to Standard & Poor's.
Madam Chair, I'm trying to understand. As I recall, we budgeted money to somebody. And I'm even having vague recollections now of a presentation in finance last year of a website that was, in fact, lacking important information, including specifically mobility, if my dim memory serves me. I'm trying to understand. The money that was budgeted for anybody to do a web project that was found by the department to be lacking. Have we paid money to people to do a bad job of what we're now getting for free?
Yes, I think under the last administration we had put some money in, and the group that ended up receiving that RFP that made their report last year at this time was considered inadequate by, I think, everybody that saw it. Is that correct? So that we lost that money, essentially. And I don't know how much we paid them. I think it was about $1 million. Yeah. How much did we pay them?
Madam Chair, I don't remember the exact figure. I can get it for you. The name of that project was SAFEP, Schools Academic, Financial, and Performance Evaluation. The product that they produced had flaws. We did have it up for a while, but the most significant flaw was that it incorrectly portrayed schools' financial data. I can't remember the exact element. But it gave incorrect financial information, so we pulled it. We have been working to incorporate some of that information into our regular website. The contract was written specifically to exclude a bid from Standard & Poor's. So no money was given to Standard & Poor's, but yes, there was a project, SAFEP, Schools Academic Financial Performance Evaluation, but it wasn't satisfactory, so it's not currently up. And we're working to see if we can fix some of the issues, but the data was just put together incorrectly.
Thank you.
All right, Representative Heidgerken, a quickie, or Representative
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, and I just have a question. I have some questions for her, but I'm going to forego them. Are we going to have her back here again talking about No Child Left Behind again?
The commissioner, you mean?
Yes.
Oh, I'm sure.
Okay, then I'll just go back.
I'm sure we'll discuss No Child Left Behind more than once. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just quickly, Commissioner Yeke, how will you inform the public about the availability of the website? And regarding those who may not have computers, will they be encouraged to use the public library, or by what other means will this material be able to be accessed?
Mm-hmm. Madam Chairman, Representative, certainly we put out a press release. Thank you. Sorry. We put out a press release. We also have it on our website. Kathy will go back to our homepage so you can see how it's designed so that individuals can know what the hot topics are and what the latest headlines are. Certainly, if an individual does not have access to a computer, we always encourage them to use the public access at the public library. We certainly depend upon the media for helping to get the word out. They have been very good about letting folks know that we have new and different things going on at the department. If you can look at the homepage that Kathy has here now, you can see the second headline there. These are our press releases in order, is the No Child Left Behind School Information Partnership website. If you scroll down to most popular information, then eventually it will move there so that people would have a direct link from our home site in order to get to this information.
Thank you.
One last thing, Representative Bernardi, then we will adjourn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a real quick question. We have 27 different languages in our school. I'm not sure about technology. Can people from different cultures who their parents don't have English proficiency skills, are they able to convert this to another language? I don't know what kind of technology you have.
Madam Chairman, Representative.
Commissioner.
Over the summer, we were in discussions with IBM about taking the school report cards and having them translated into any one of a number of languages. I believe that they had 10. I'm not sure, so certainly they would not have 27. There was a technical glitch having to do with PDF files, and I am not a technology guru, so I can't give you the specifics on that. But certainly we can speak to Standard & Poor's and perhaps put them in touch with IBM that this is a possibility that they could use on this site.
All right, I think that was the last question. Thank you very much for the presentation. Thank you, members, for your patience, and see you Thursday. Meeting's adjourned.